Morelia, Apophthegmata Laconica. Agesicles, the king of the Lacedaemonians, when someone marveled that although he was fond of listening, he did not receive the sophist Philophanes, said, I want to be a pupil only of those whose son I also am. And to one who asked how a man without a bodyguard could rule in safety, he said, if he rules his people as fathers rule their sons. Agesilaus the Great, once when he had drawn the lot to preside over a drinking party, was asked by the wine steward how much he should pour for each guest. If much wine has been prepared, he said, give each as much as he asks, but if little, give an equal share to all. When some wrongdoer endured torture unflinchingly, he said, what a thoroughly wicked man to spend his endurance and fortitude on base and shameful deeds. When someone praised an orator for his skill in magnifying small matters, he said, not even a cobbler is a good one who fits large shoes on a small foot. When someone once said to him, you have agreed, and kept repeating the same claim, he said, yes, indeed, if it is just, but if not, I spoke, but I did not agree. And when the man added, but surely kings must carry out whatever they nod their assent to, he replied, no more than those who approach kings must ask for and speak what is just, aiming at what is timely and fitting for kings. Whenever he heard people blaming or praising someone, he thought it no less necessary to study the character of the speakers than the matter they spoke of. Once, while he was still a boy, when the gymnopaediae were being celebrated, the master of the chorus placed him in an inconspicuous spot, and he accepted this even though he had already been declared king, saying, well done, for I will show that it is not places that make men honored, but men who make places honored. When a doctor prescribed for him a rather elaborate and complicated course of treatment, he said, by the two gods, it is not my fixed purpose to live at all costs, nor do I accept every remedy. Once, while he stood at the altar of the goddess of the bronze house sacrificing an ox, a louse bit him. He was not disturbed, but took it openly, in front of everyone, and killed it, saying, by the gods, I gladly kill a conspirator even at the altar. On another occasion, seeing a mouse being dragged from its hole by a boy who held it, and when the mouse turned, bit the hand of its captor, and escaped, he pointed this out to those present and said, when the smallest of creatures defends itself so against those who wrong it, think what men ought to do. Wishing to launch a war against the Persian in order to free the Greeks living in Asia, he consulted the oracle of Zeus at Dodona, and when it bade him proceed, he reported the response to the ephors. They in turn ordered him to go to Delphi as well and inquire about the same matter. So he went to the oracle and asked in these words, Apollo, do you approve of what my father also approved? When the god assented, Agesilaus was chosen and set out on campaign accordingly. When Tissaphernes, at first fearing Agesilaus, made a truce promising that the king would let the Greek cities be autonomous. But then, having summoned a large army from the king, declared war on him unless he withdrew from Asia, Agesilaus gladly welcomed this breach of the truce and set out as though he meant to advance into Caria. But when Tissaphernes had gathered his forces there, Agesilaus broke camp and invaded Phrygia instead. And after taking a great many cities and a quantity of money, he said to his friends, to do wrong after making a truce is impious, but to outwit the enemy is not only just and glorious, but also pleasant and profitable. Having been worsted in cavalry, he withdrew to Ephesus and directed the wealthy men to furnish a horse and a man each in his stead, so as to be excused from the campaign. And thus horses and capable men were quickly assembled in place of cowards and rich men. He said he was emulating Agamemnon, for that man too had accepted a fine mare and had excused a cowardly, wealthy man from campaigning. When, at his order, the sellers of booty put the captives up for sale naked, there were many buyers for their clothing, but people laughed at the bodies themselves, white and altogether soft from being raised in the shade, considering them useless and worth nothing. Agesilaus, standing by, said, these are the things you fight for, and these are the men you fight against. Having routed Tissaphernes near Lydia and killed a great many of his men, he overran the king's territory. When Tissaphernes sent him money and asked him to end the war, Agesilaus replied that it was the city's right to make peace, and that he took more pleasure in enriching his soldiers than in being rich himself, and that he considered it noble for Greeks not to accept gifts from their enemies, but to win spoils instead. When Megabates, the son of Spithridates, a young man of great beauty, approached him meaning to greet him with an embrace and a kiss, because he seemed to be greatly loved by him, Agesilaus drew back. When the boy stopped approaching him because of this, Agesilaus sought him out again. His friends said Agesilaus himself was to blame for having shrunk from the beautiful boy's kiss, and told him that if he did not now play the coward, the boy would still come to him. Agesilaus, after remaining alone with his thoughts for no little while and falling silent, said, "There is no need for us to persuade him after all, for I think I would rather rise above such desires than take by force even the most valorous city of those arrayed against me, since it is better to preserve one's own freedom than to strip others of theirs." In most matters, then, this was the sort of man Agesilaus was. Yet there were occasions when he made use of circumstance more for what was expedient. Once, when a rather chaotic breaking of camp took place, he left his sick beloved behind. And when the boy begged and called after him in tears, Agesilaus turned and said, "How hard it is to feel pity and to keep one's judgment at the same time." Though otherwise exact and law-abiding, in matters concerning friends, he regarded excessive strictness toward them as no more than a pretext. A short letter of his is preserved in which he intercedes for one of his friends, addressed to Idrius the Carian, and reads thus: "If Nicias is not guilty, let him go, and if he is guilty, let him go for my sake, in any case, let him go. As for his manner of life, he had nothing better than those around him. He abstained altogether from excess and drunkenness, and treated sleep not as a master, but as something governed by the demands of his affairs. He bore heat and cold so well that he alone seemed always to make proper use of whatever the season brought. Camping in the midst of his soldiers, he slept in a bed no better than anyone else's. He continually said that a commander ought to surpass ordinary men not in softness, but in endurance and courage. When someone asked what the laws of Lycurgus had won for Sparta, he said, 'To despise pleasures.' To one who marveled at the plainness of his clothing and food, and of the other Spartans besides, he said, 'In exchange for this way of life, stranger, we reap freedom.' When another urged him to relax his habits, on the ground that the uncertainty of fortune might never allow the occasion for such indulgence again, he replied, 'But I train myself, I tell you, so as to seek no change amid any change.' And even in old age he kept to the same regimen. To one who asked why, at his age, he went about without a tunic in the depths of winter, he said, 'So that the young may imitate me, having as their example their eldest men and rulers.' When the Thasians, as he marched through their territory with his army, sent him barley meal, geese, sweetmeats, honey cakes, and all sorts of other costly foods and drinks, he accepted only the barley meal and ordered the bearers to carry the rest back again, since it was of no use to his men. When they pressed and begged him earnestly to accept it all, he ordered it distributed to the helots instead. When asked the reason, he said, 'It is not fitting for men who practice manly virtue to indulge in such delicacies, for the things that entice servile natures are foreign to free men.' On another occasion, because the Thasians believed they had been greatly benefited by him, they honored him with temples and divine rites and sent an embassy about the matter. Having read the honors the envoys brought him, he asked whether their homeland had the power to make men gods. When they said it did, he replied, 'Come then, make yourselves gods first, and if you manage that, then I will believe that you can also make me one.' When the Greek peoples of Asia voted to set up statues of him in their most illustrious cities, he added in reply, 'Let there be no image of me, painted, molded, or fashioned in any way.' Once, seeing in Asia a house roofed with square-cut beams, he asked the owner whether square timber grew there. When the man said no, but round, Agesilaus said, 'Well then, if it had been square, would you have made it round?' When asked once how far the boundaries of Laconia extended, he brandished his spear and said, 'As far as this can reach.' When another asked why Sparta had no walls, he pointed to the citizens under arms and said, 'These are the walls of the Lacedaemonians.' And when someone else asked the same question, he said, 'Cities ought to be walled not with stones and timber, but with the virtues of those who dwell in them.' He urged his friends to strive to be rich not in money, but in courage and virtue. Whenever he wanted some task done quickly by his soldiers, he himself was the first to set his hand to it, in full view of everyone. He took pride in working no less hard than anyone else, and in ruling himself more than in being king. Seeing a lame Spartan setting out for war and looking for a horse, he said, 'Do you not see that war has need not of men who flee, but of men who stand fast?' When asked how he had won such great fame, he said, "By despising death." When someone asked why the Spartans went into battle to the music of pipes, he said, "So that, marching in step to the rhythm, both the cowardly and the brave may be made plain to see." When someone called the king of the Persians blessed for being so very young, he said, "But Priam too was not unfortunate at that age." Having brought a great part of Asia under his own control, he resolved to march against the king himself, so as to put a stop to his sitting idle and corrupting the popular leaders of the Greeks. But when he was recalled by the ephors, because of the Greek war that had broken out around Sparta on account of money sent by the Persian, he said that a good ruler must be ruled by the laws, and sailed away from Asia, leaving behind him great longing among the Greeks there. Since the Persian coinage bore the stamp of an archer, as he broke camp, he remarked that he was being driven out of Asia by 30,000 of the king's archers, for so many gold derricks had been carried to Athens and Thebes through Timocrates and distributed among the popular leaders that the peoples were stirred up to war against the Spartans. And he wrote back to the ephors this letter. Agesilaus to the ephors, greetings. We have subdued the greater part of Asia, driven back the barbarians, and made great quantities of weapons in Ionia. But since you bid me return within the appointed time, I am obeying the letter, and shall very nearly outrun it. For I hold my command not for myself, but for the city and its allies. And a ruler truly rules justly only when he is himself ruled by the laws and the ephors, or by whatever other officers there may be in the city. When he had crossed the Hellespont and was marching through Thrace, he asked nothing of any of the barbarians there, but sent word ahead to each people, asking whether he should pass through their land as a friend or as an enemy. The rest received him in a friendly manner and escorted him on his way. But the people called the Trossi, to whom Xerxes too, it is said, had given gifts, demanded of Agesilaus as the price of passage 100 talents of silver and as many women. He, mocking them, said, "Then why did they not come at once to take it?" And advanced, and meeting them drawn up for battle, routed them, killed many, and passed through. He sent the same question to the king of the Macedonians, and when that king said he needed to deliberate, Agesilaus said, "Let him deliberate then, but we will be on our way." The king, marveling at his boldness and afraid, ordered him to be escorted forward as a friend. Since the Thessalians were allied with his enemies, he ravaged their country, and sent Xenocles and Scythes to Larissa to negotiate friendship. But when these men were seized and held under guard, the rest of the army, taking this hard, thought Agesilaus ought to encamp around Larissa and besiege it. He, however, said he would not wish to gain the whole of Thessaly at the cost of losing either of the two men, and instead recovered them under a truce. When he learned that a battle had taken place near Corinth, in which very few Spartans had died, but a very great number of Corinthians, Athenians, and their other allies, he was not seen to be overjoyed or elated by the victory. Rather, he gave a heavy groan and said, "Alas for Greece, which has destroyed at her own hands so many men as would have sufficed to conquer all the barbarians." When the Pharsalians harassed and molested his army, he routed them with 500 cavalry and set up a trophy at Narthacium. He cherished that victory above all others, because, having organized the cavalry entirely by himself, it was by this force alone that he overcame those who prided themselves most on their horsemanship. When Diphritus brought word from home that he should invade Boeotia at once, straight from the march, even though Agesilaus had intended to do this later with greater preparation, he did not disobey the authorities. Instead, summoning 2 regiments from the troops campaigning around Corinth, he invaded Boeotia. Engaging at Coronea with the Thebans, Athenians, Argives, Corinthians, and both branches of the Locrians, he was victorious, even though his body was in poor condition from many wounds, in what Xenophon calls the greatest battle of his time. Yet despite so many successes and victories, he changed nothing in his manner or mode of life once he returned home. Seeing some of the citizens growing proud and arrogant on account of horse breeding, he persuaded his sister Cinisca to enter a chariot at Olympia, wishing to show the Greeks that such things are a matter not of any virtue at all, but of wealth and expenditure. Keeping the wise Xenophon as a valued companion, he urged him to send for his sons and raise them in laestymen, so that they might be trained in the noblest of all lessons, how to rule and how to be ruled. On another occasion, When asked why the Spartans were held in greater esteem than other peoples, he said, "Because, more than others, they practice ruling and being ruled." When Lysander died, Agesilaus discovered that a large faction had been formed, one that Lysander, immediately upon his return from Asia, had organized against him, and he set out to expose what sort of citizen the man had truly been in life. And he read a speech left behind in a book, one that had been written by Cleon of Halicarnassus, which Lysander had intended to take up and deliver to the people. Concerning revolutionary measures and a change of the constitution, he wished to bring it out into the open. But when one of the elders went over the speech, and, fearing its cleverness, advised him not to dig up Lysander again, but rather to bury the speech along with him, he was persuaded and kept quiet. As for those who openly opposed him, he did not harass them. Instead, he managed to have some of them regularly sent out as generals and magistrates, and then showed them, once they had gained power, to have become wicked and greedy for gain. And afterward, when they were brought to trial, he would come to their aid and fight on their side, thereby making them his own and winning them over to himself, so that no one remained his rival. Someone asked him to write on his behalf to his personal friends in Asia so that he might obtain justice. "But my friends," he said, "do justice by themselves, even if I do not write." Someone showed him the city's wall, strong and built with extreme solidity, and asked whether it seemed beautiful to him. "Yes, by Zeus," he said, "beautiful, but not as a dwelling for men, rather for women." When a certain Megarian was boasting to him grandly about his city, he said, "Young man, your words need a great deal of power behind them." Whatever he saw others admiring, he seemed not even to notice. Once Callipides, the tragic actor who had a name and reputation among the Greeks and was courted by everyone, first came up to him and greeted him, and then, striding boldly, threw himself in among those walking with the king and made a show of himself, expecting that Agesilaus would begin some friendly exchange. At last he said, "Do you not recognize me, O king, and have you not heard who I am?" Agesilaus looked at him and said, "But are you not Callipides the Mimiclayer?" For that is what the Spartans call actors. When he was invited to hear a man who could imitate the nightingale's song, he declined, saying, "I have heard the nightingale herself many times." As for Menecrates the physician, since he had succeeded in some treatments given up as hopeless and had been called Zeus, and made vulgar use of this title, and even dared to write to Agesilaus in these terms, "Menecrates Zeus to King Agesilaus, greeting, Agesilaus," without reading the rest, wrote back, "King Agesilaus to Menecrates, health." When Kanaan and Pharnabazus, ruling the sea with the king's fleet, were besieging the coastal regions of Laconia, and the wall of Athens was rebuilt with money supplied by Pharnabazus, the Spartans made peace with the king. And they sent their citizen Antalcidas to Tiribazus, handing over to the king the Greeks of Asia, on whose behalf Agesilaus had gone to war. For this reason, it fell out that Agesilaus had the least share in that disgrace, for Antalcidas was his enemy and pursued the peace by every means, on the ground that the war was making Agesilaus greater and more famous and powerful. Nevertheless, to the man who said that the Spartans were Medizing, he replied that it was rather the Medes who were Laconizing. When he was once asked which of the virtues was better, courage or justice, he said that courage was of no use if justice were not present, but if all men became just, there would be no need of courage at all. Since the inhabitants of Asia were accustomed to call the king of the Persians great, he said, "How is he greater than I am, unless he is also more just and more temperate?" He used to say that the inhabitants of Asia, though free, were bad, while as slaves they were good. Asked how one might best win a good reputation among men, he said, "By speaking the best things and doing the noblest deeds." He said that a general ought to have boldness toward the enemy, but goodwill toward those under his command. When someone asked what boys ought to learn, he said, "The very things they will use when they become men." While he was judging a certain case, and the accuser had spoken well but the defendant poorly, saying to each point only, "Agesilaus, the king must uphold the laws," he replied, "And if someone were breaking into your house or taking away your cloak, would you expect the builder or the weaver of the cloak to come to your aid?" When a letter was brought to him from the king of the Persians, after the peace had been made which the Persian envoy, together with Callias the Spartan, had brought about, concerning guest friendship and alliance, he refused to accept it, saying that word should be sent back to the king. Privately, there is no need for him to send me letters, but if he shows himself a friend to Sparta and well-disposed toward Greece, then I too shall be his friend with all my power. But if he is caught plotting against us, let him be assured that I will be no friend to him, however many letters I receive. Being exceedingly fond of his children, it is said that with his little ones he would ride astride a reed as if it were a horse, playing at home. And when he was seen by one of his friends, he begged him to tell no one, until he himself had become a father of children. While he was continually at war with the Thebans and had been wounded in battle, they say Antalcidas said to him, "You are getting fine lessons from the Thebans, having taught them, against their will and their ignorance, how to fight." And indeed they say that the Thebans became, at that time, the most warlike of all against themselves, because of the many campaigns the Spartans made against them. For this reason, the ancient Lycurgus, in the so-called Retras, forbade making war repeatedly on the same people, so that they might not learn how to fight. When he once heard that the allies were growing resentful because of the constant campaigns, since so few Spartans were followed by so many allies, wishing to demonstrate their true numbers, he ordered all the allies to sit down together, mixed with one another, while the Spartans sat apart by themselves. Then he had the potters called to stand up first, and when they had stood up, he had the smiths called next, then the carpenters and builders in turn, and each of the other trades. And so nearly all the allies stood up, but not one of the Spartans, for it was forbidden to them to practice or learn a manual trade. Then Agesilaus laughed and said, "You see, gentlemen, how many more soldiers we send out than you do." In the battle at Leuctra, when many of the Spartans had fled and under the law were liable to the penalties for it, the ephors, seeing the city bereft of men and in need of soldiers, wished to lift the disgrace while still preserving the laws. They therefore chose Agesilaus as lawgiver. But he, coming forward before the assembly, said, "I would not become the maker of other laws, for to the laws that exist I would neither add anything, nor take anything away, nor alter anything. But as for the laws we already have, let it be resolved that they hold good from tomorrow onward." When Epaminondas came on with such a torrent and flood of forces, the Thebans and their allies exulting greatly in their victory, Agesilaus nevertheless kept him from the city and forced him to turn back, though those within the city were few. In the battle near Mantinea, he urged the Spartans to let everyone else alone and to fight only against Epaminondas, saying that only sensible men were truly brave, and that only they were responsible for victory. "If, then, we remove this man, we shall most easily bring the rest under our power, for they are witless and worth nothing." And this indeed came to pass. For while victory lay with Epaminondas and the Spartans were in flight, when he turned to rally his own men, one of the Spartans struck him a mortal blow, and after he fell, the men with Agesilaus turned back from their flight and made the victory an even match, the Thebans appearing far worse, and the Spartans far better than before. When Sparta was in need of money for war and for maintaining mercenaries, Agesilaus went to Egypt, summoned by the Egyptian king to serve for pay. But because of the plainness of his dress, he came to be despised by the people there, for they expected to see the king of Sparta, like the king of Persia, resplendently adorned in body, holding as they did a poor opinion of what makes a king. He showed them, however, in the meantime, that greatness and worth ought to be won by intelligence and courage. When he saw that those about to stand with him were afraid of the coming danger because of the enemy's numbers, for they were 200,000, and the fewness of his own men, before the battle line was drawn up, he resolved to offer sacrifice beforehand, unknown to the others. And on his left hand, which was covered, he wrote the word victory. And taking the liver from the diviner, he laid it upon the hand thus inscribed. And holding it for a good while, he pretended to be in doubt and perplexity, until the letters, being pressed into the liver, were imprinted upon it. Then he displayed it to those who were about to fight alongside him, saying that the gods had revealed victory through the writing. Thinking they now had a sure token of triumph, they took courage for the battle. When the enemy, because of their numbers, were digging a trench around his camp, and Nectanebo, his ally, wished to go out and fight it out, he said he would not prevent the enemy from making themselves equal in numbers to his own men. But when the trench lacked only a little of being complete, he drew up his forces at the still-open gap, and, fighting against equal numbers on equal terms, routed them and made great slaughter of the enemy with the few soldiers about him, and sent much money to the city. On the voyage back from Egypt, as he lay dying, he instructed those about him to make no image of his body, molded, painted, or otherwise represented. For if I have done any noble deed, that will be my monument, but if not, not even all the statues in the world will help, being the works of mere craftsmen, worth nothing. Agesipolis, son of Cleombrotus, when someone said that Philip had raised Olynthus in a few days, said, "By the gods, he will not build another such city in many times that span." When another said that Agesipolis had been given as a hostage among the reigning kings in their prime, rather than their children or wives, he said, "That is only just, for it is right that we ourselves bear our own faults." When he wished to send for hunting dogs from home, and someone said, "There is no export of them allowed," he said, "Nor was there formerly of men either, but now there is." Agesipolis, son of Pausanias, when the Athenians, in a dispute they had with the Megarians against one another, were taking the city of Megara as arbiter, said, "It is shameful, O Athenians, that you, the leaders of the Greeks, should know justice less well than the Megarians." Agis, son of Archidamus, when the Ephors once said, "Go, taking the young men, against the fatherland of this man, he himself will lead you to the Acropolis," said, "And how, O Ephors, can it be right to trust so many young men to a man who is betraying his own fatherland?" Asked what study is most practiced at Sparta, he said, "Knowing how to rule and be ruled." He said the Spartans did not ask how many the enemy were, but where they were. At Mantinea, when he was being prevented from fighting the enemy, who were more numerous, he said, "A man who wishes to rule many must be willing to fight many." When someone asked how many the Spartans were, he said, "As many as are enough to keep off the wicked." Passing along the walls of the Corinthians, and seeing them high and strong and stretching for a great distance, he said, "What women live in this place?" When a certain sophist said, "Speech is the greatest of all things," he replied, "Then, if you keep silent, you are worth nothing." When the Argives, after their defeat, again met him rather boldly, and he saw his allies troubled, he said, "Take courage, men, for if we who are victorious are afraid, what do you think those we have defeated are doing?" To the envoy from Abdera, who, after speaking at length, stopped and asked what he should report to his fellow citizens, he said, "That for as long a time as you wish to speak, I listened in silence." When some praised the Eleans because they were most just in the conduct of the Olympic Games, he said, "And what great or wonderful thing do they do, if once every 5 years, on a single day, they practice justice?" To those who said that some members of the other royal house were jealous of him, he said, "Then their own troubles will grieve them, and, besides these, my good fortune and that of my friends as well." When someone advised that a way of retreat should be given to fleeing enemies, he said, "How then shall we fight against those who stand firm through courage, if we do not fight those who flee through cowardice?" When someone spoke of the freedom of the Greeks as not ignoble, yet difficult to accomplish, he said, "Your words, stranger, need power and money behind them." When someone said that Philip would make Greece impossible to set foot in, he said, "Our own occupations at home are enough for us, stranger." An envoy who had come from Perinthus to Sparta spoke at great length, and when he stopped speaking and asked Agis what he should report to the Perinthians, he said, "What else than that you scarcely stopped speaking while I kept silent?" Going as envoy alone to Philip, when Philip said, "What is this? Do you come alone?" he said, "Yes, for it is to one man that I come." When one of the older men said to him, since he himself was old, seeing that the ancient customs were being relaxed and other corrupt ones creeping in, so that things at Sparta were now turned upside down, Agis said playfully, "Things are proceeding quite logically, if this is happening. For I too, when I was a boy, heard from my father that things had been turned upside down among them, and he said that his own father had told him the same thing when he was a boy, so that we should not be surprised if later things are worse than earlier ones, but rather if they should ever turn out better or even the same." Asked how a man might remain free, he said, "By despising death." Agis the younger, when Demades said that the Laconian swords were so short that jugglers could swallow them, replied, "And yet the Spartans reach their enemies well enough with them." To a wicked man who kept asking who was the best Spartan, he said, the one least like you. Agis, the last of the Spartan kings, seized by ambush and condemned by the ephors without trial, as he was being led to the noose, seeing one of the attendants weeping, said, "Stop weeping for me, fellow, for even though I am perishing so unlawfully and unjustly, I am superior to those who are killing me." And having said this, he willingly gave his neck to the noose. Acrotatus, when his parents asked him to join them in some unjust act, refused for a while. But when they pressed him, he said, "While I was with you, I knew no notion of justice at all. But since you gave me over to my fatherland and its laws, and to justice besides, and goodness, as best you could, I shall try to follow these rather than you. Since you wish me to act rightly, and since what is right both for a private citizen and much more for a ruler, I shall do what you wish, but I must decline what you say." Alcamenes, son of Telecles, when someone asked how a man might best preserve his kingship, said, "If he does not set gain above honor." When another asked why he would not accept gifts from the Messenians, he said, "Because if I take them, it is impossible to keep peace with the laws." And when someone remarked that, though he possessed a sufficient fortune, he lived frugally, he said, "It is a fine thing for a man of many possessions to live by calculation and not by appetite." Anaxandrides, son of Leon, said to a man distressed at the exile that had been imposed on him by the city, "My good fellow, do not dread fleeing the city, but dread fleeing justice." To a man who spoke rightly enough before the ephors, but at greater length than was needed, he said, "Stranger, you use what is needed not as it is needed." When someone asked why the Spartans hand over their fields to the Helots instead of tending them themselves, he said, "Because we acquired these men for our own sake, not to tend fields." When another said that reputation does harm, and that the man who is rid of it will be happy, he said, "Then, by your reasoning, wrongdoers would be happy, for how could a man who commits sacrilege or injustice be concerned for his reputation?" When another asked why the Spartans face danger boldly in war, he said, "Because we practice reverence concerning life, not fear, as others do." When someone asked him why the elders judge capital cases over several days, and even if a man is acquitted, he is nonetheless still liable to trial, he said, "They judge over many days because for those who err fatally in a matter of death, there is no chance to reconsider. And the law requires that he remain liable, because it is also lawful, under this same law, to reconsider for the better." Anaxander, son of Eurycrates, when someone asked why they do not gather money into the public treasury, said, "So that those who become its guardians are not corrupted." Anaxilles, to a man wondering why the ephors do not rise before the kings, even though they are appointed by the kings, said, "For the same reason that they also serve as ephors." Androclates the Laconian, having been maimed in the leg, enrolled himself among the warriors. And when some objected and tried to prevent him because he was maimed, he said, "But it is not the man who flees, but the man who stands his ground, who must fight the enemy ranged against him." Antalcidas, being initiated at Samothrace, was asked by the priest what was the most terrible thing he had done in his life, and said, "If I have done any such thing, the gods themselves will know it." To an Athenian who called the Spartans uneducated, he said, "At any rate, we alone have learned no evil from you." And when another Athenian said to him, "Yet indeed we have often driven you back from the Cephisus," he said, "But we have never driven you back from the Eurotas." When asked how a man might best please people, he said, "If he converses with them as agreeably as possible, but deals with them as helpfully as possible." When a sophist was about to recite an encomium of Heracles, he said, "Who, then, blames him?" To Agesilaus, who had been struck in battle by the Thebans, he said, "You are paying the tuition fee, having taught them to fight when they neither wished nor knew how." For it seemed that through Agesilaus's repeated campaigns against them, they had become warlike. He used to say that the young men were the walls of Sparta, and the points of their spears its boundaries. To a man who asked why the Spartans use short daggers in war, he said, "Because we fight close to the enemy." Antiochus, when he was ephor, on hearing that Philip had given the Messenians their territory, asked whether he had also given them the power to hold it by fighting for it. Arius, when some praised not their own wives, but certain other men's wives, said, "By the gods, one ought not to speak carelessly about fine and good women at all. They should remain entirely unknown, whatever sort they may be, except to those who live with them." Once passing through Selinus in Sicily, he saw an elegiac couplet inscribed on a monument. These men, once quenching tyranny, bronze Ares took, around the gates of Selinus they died. He said, "You died justly, for attempting to quench a tyranny while it was still burning. You ought instead to have let the whole thing burn to the ground." Ariston, when someone praised the saying of Cleomenes that when asked what a good king ought to do, he had said one should benefit one's friends and harm one's enemies, said, "And how much better, my good fellow, to benefit one's friends and make one's enemies into friends." This saying, generally attributed to Socrates by everyone, is also credited to him. When someone asked how many Spartans there were in number, he said, "As many as are enough to keep off the enemy." When an Athenian was reading a funeral eulogy for those who had fallen at the hands of the Lacedaemonians, he said, "What sort of men, then, do you suppose ours are, who conquered these?" Archidamidas, to a man who praised Charilaus because he was gentle alike to everyone, said, "And how could a man be justly praised if he is gentle even to the wicked?" When someone found fault with Hecateus the sophist because, though received at the common mess, he said nothing at all, he said, "You seem not to know that the man who knows how to speak also knows the occasion for speaking." Archidamus, son of Zeuxidamus, when someone asked him who governed Sparta, said, "The laws and the magistrates according to the laws." To a man who praised a lyre singer and admired his skill, he said, "My good fellow, what honor will there be from you for good men, when you praise a lyre singer so highly?" And when someone commending a harpist to him said, "This man is a good harpist," he said, "Among us, this sort of man is a good soup maker," meaning that it makes no difference whether pleasure is produced through the sound of instruments or through the preparation of relish and soup. When someone promised to make his wine sweet, he said, "To what end? For it will cost more and will make our men less fit for war." When marching against the city of the Corinthians with an army, he saw hares starting up from the ground near the wall, so he said to his fellow soldiers, "Our enemies are easy prey." When two men took him as their arbiter, he led them into the precinct of Athena of the Bronze House and made them swear to abide by his judgment. And when they had sworn, he said, "I decide, then, that you shall not leave this precinct until you have settled your differences with one another." When Dionysius, tyrant of Sicily, sent costly clothing for his daughters, he did not accept it, saying, "I fear that if the girls put it on, they will appear ugly to me." Seeing his son fighting rashly against the Athenians, he said, "Either add to your strength or lessen your ambition." Archidamus, son of Agesilaus, when Philip, after the battle at Chaeronea, wrote him a rather harsh letter, wrote back, "If you were to measure your own shadow, you would not find it grown any larger than before your victory." When asked how much territory the Spartans control, he said, "As much as they can reach with the spear." Periander the physician, being of considerable repute in his art and praised in every way, but writing poor poems, he said, "Why in the world, Periander, do you wish, instead of being called a fine physician, to be called a bad poet?" In the war against Philip, when some advised that the battle should be joined far from home, he said, "But that is not what one should look to, but rather where we shall be superior to the enemy in the fight." To those who praised him when he won the battle against the Arcadians, he said, "It would have been better if we had conquered them by good judgment rather than by force." When he invaded Arcadia and learned that the Eleans were coming to their aid, he sent them a message. "Archidamus to the Eleans, quiet is a fine thing." When the allies in the Peloponnesian War kept asking how much money would suffice and demanded that the contributions be fixed, he said, "War does not feed on a fixed ration." Seeing a catapult shot brought then for the first time from Sicily, he cried out, "Heracles, a man's valor is done for." When the Greeks were unwilling to obey him and to break off their agreements with Antigonus and Craterus and the Macedonians, and to be free, on the ground that the Lacedaemonians would prove harsher masters than the Macedonians, he said, "A sheep always utters the same sound, but a man utters many and varied sounds until he accomplishes what he has resolved." Istikritidas, when someone said to him after King Agis had been defeated in the battle against Antipater near Megalopolis, "What will you do, Lacedaemonians? Will you be slaves to the Macedonians?" said, "What then? Could Antipater prevent us from dying in battle for Sparta?" Bias, ambushed by Iphicrates the Athenian general, when asked by his soldiers what should be done, said, "What else than that you should be saved, and I should die fighting?" Brasidas, catching a mouse among some dried figs and being bitten, let it go. Then he said to those present, "Nothing is so small that it cannot save itself by daring to defend itself against those who attack it." In a certain battle, struck by a javelin through his shield, he pulled the spear out of the wound, and with that very weapon killed the enemy. And when asked how he had been wounded, he said, "By my shield betraying me." Setting out for war, he wrote to the ephors, "Whatever I resolve, I shall do in the war, or I shall die." When it happened that he fell while freeing the Greeks in the region of Thrace, and envoys sent to Laestemon came first to his mother Argileanus, she first asked whether Brasidas had died nobly. And when the Thracians praised him extravagantly and said that there was no other man like him, she said, "You do not know what you are saying, strangers. Brasidas was indeed a good man, but Sparta has many better than he." Damonidas, placed last in the chorus by the man arranging it, said, "Well done, chorus master, you have discovered how even this position, though without honor, may become honorable." Dames, in response to the message sent by Alexander that they should vote him a god, said, "We grant Alexander, if he wishes, the title of god." Damindas, when Philip invaded the Peloponnese and someone said, "The Lacedaemonians are likely to suffer terribly unless they come to terms with him," said, "You weakling, what terrible thing could we suffer, we who scorn death?" Dersalidas, when Pyrrhus held his army in Spartan territory, was sent to him as an envoy. And when Pyrrhus demanded that they receive back their Cleonymus, or else learn that they were braver than no other people, he answered, "If he is a god, we do not fear him, for we do no wrong, and if he is a man, he is no better than we are." Demaratus, when Orontes had treated him rather harshly and someone said, "Orontes has treated you harshly," Demaratus said, "He has done me no wrong, for those who deal with men to please them do harm, not those who deal with them in enmity." When someone asked why they dishonor those who have lost their shields, but no longer those who have lost their helmets and breastplates, he said, "Because men put these on for their own sake, but the shield for the sake of the common formation." Listening to a harpist, he said, "He seems to me to play the fool not badly." In a certain council, asked whether it was from folly or from lack of words that he was silent, he said, "But a fool, at least, could not be capable of keeping silent." When someone asked why, though he was a king, he lived in exile from Sparta, he said, "Because the laws are stronger than the king." When one of the Persians, because of his continual bribery, took away his beloved and said, "Laconian, I have hunted down your beloved," he said, "By the gods, you have not hunted him, you have bought him." When one of the Persians revolted from the king and was persuaded by Demaratus to return, and the king was about to put the Persian to death, he said, "It is shameful, O king, that when he was your enemy you could not obtain justice from him for his revolt, but now that he has become your friend, you kill him." To a man who fawned upon the king and often mocked him about his exile, he said, "I will not fight you, stranger, for I have used up my life's allotted portion." Ecpreps, as ephor, took an adze and cut off two of the nine strings of Phrynes the musician, saying, "Do not do violence to music." Epinetus used to say that liars were the cause of all faults and wrongs alike. Eubidas, hearing some men praising another man's wife, would not accept it, saying that concerning a woman's nature there ought to be no talk at all among outsiders. Eudemidas, son of Archidamus and brother of Agis, seeing Xenocrates, already an old man, philosophizing with his disciples in the academy, asked who the old man was. And when someone said that he was a wise man and one of those who seek virtue, he said, "And when will he use it, if he is only now seeking it?" And hearing a philosopher argue that only the wise man is a good general, he said, "The argument is admirable, but the speaker is not to be trusted, for he has not been through the trumpet's call." When Xenocrates had delivered his lecture and was concluding it, Eudemidas was present, and when one of his companions said, "It was just when we arrived that he stopped," he said, "Quite right, if indeed he had already said what he intended to say." And when the other said, "It would have been good to hear," he said, "Would we, then, having come upon a man who has already dined, think it right to make him dine again?" When someone asked why, when the citizens were choosing the war against the Macedonians, he alone judged it best to keep quiet, he said, "Because I do not wish to prove them liars." When another cited the prizes of valor won against the Persians and urged him on to war, he said, You seem to me not to know, at least, that it is the same thing to fight 50 wolves after having conquered 1,000 sheep. When a certain harpist had had great success, they asked him what sort of man he thought him to be. He said, a great charmer in a small matter. When someone praised Athens, he said, and who could rightly praise this city, which no one, once he had become better, has loved. When an Argive said that the Laconians grow worse when traveling abroad, since they depart from their ancestral laws, he said, but you, at least, do not become worse but better when you come to Sparta. When Alexander proclaimed at Olympia that all exiles might return to their own cities except the Thebans, he said, an unfortunate proclamation for you, Thebans, but a glorious one, for Alexander fears you alone. When asked for what reason before? Before dangers, they sacrifice to the Muses, so that, he said, their deeds might win a fitting report. Eurycratidas, son of Anaxandridas, when someone asked why the ephors judge contractual disputes with each state individually, said, so that we may trust one another even in the midst of enemies. Zeuxidamus, when someone asked why they keep the laws concerning courage unwritten, and do not give them to the young to read once they are enrolled, said, because we must accustom ourselves to deeds of manly virtue rather than attend to writings. When an Aetolian said that for men capable of manly deeds war is better than peace, he said, no, by the gods, but for such men death is better than life. Herondas, when at Athens a man had been convicted on a charge of idleness, being present and inquiring into it, ordered that the man who had lost this suit over his liberty be pointed out to him. Theridas, sharpening a sword, when asked if it was sharp, said, sharper than slander. Themistias, being a seer, foretold to King Leonidas the destruction that was to befall him and those campaigning with him at Thermopylae. And when Leonidas sent him away to Laestemon on the pretext of reporting what would happen, but in truth so that he would not perish with the rest, he would not consent, but said, I was sent as a fighter, not a messenger. Theopompus, to one who asked how a king might most safely guard his kingship, said, by granting his friends a rightful freedom of speech, and by not overlooking, so far as he is able, wrongs done to his subjects. To the stranger who said that among his own citizens he was called a lover of Sparta, he said, it would be better for you to be called a lover of your own city than a lover of Sparta. And when the envoy from Elis said that his fellow citizens had sent him away for this very reason, that he alone had emulated the Laconian way of life, Theopompus said, and which is better, your life or that of your other citizens? When the man said his own, Theopompus said, how then could that city be kept safe, when among so many only one man is good? And when someone said that Sparta is kept safe because of her kings, since they are fit to command, he said, no, because the citizens are fit to obey. When the people of Pylos voted him greater honors, he wrote back that time increases moderate honors, but effaces those that are excessive. When someone showed him a wall and asked whether it was strong and high, he said, not even if women had built it. Thoritian, coming from Delphi and seeing Philip's army occupying the pass at the Isthmus, said, bad gatekeepers you have, Corinthians, the Peloponnese has. Thictamenes, when the ephors had condemned him to death, went away smiling. And when one of those present asked whether he now despised the laws of Sparta, he said, no, I am glad that I must pay this penalty without having asked or borrowed anything from anyone. Hippodamus, when Agis was drawing up against Archidamus, and Hippodamus had been sent with Agis to Sparta to see to necessary matters, said, I shall die no nobler death than fighting bravely for Sparta. He had already lived beyond 80 years, and after saying this, he took up his arms, took his place at the king's right hand, and died fighting. Hippocratides, when the satrap of Caria wrote to him that a Lacedaemonian, aware of a certain conspiracy, had kept silent about it, and asked what he should do with the man, wrote back, if you have done him some great benefit, kill him, but if not, banish him from your country as one worthless in respect of virtue. And once, when a boy he met, followed by a lover, was thrown into confusion, he said, one ought to walk only with such companions that, seen in their company, you keep the same color. Callicratidas the admiral, when Lysander's friends asked him to let them kill one of their enemies and take 50 talents for it, though he himself was in great need of money to pay the sailors, would not consent. Cleander, who was his advisor, said, but I myself would have taken it, were I you. So would I, he replied, were I you. arriving at Sardis before Cyrus the Younger, who was an ally of the Lacedaemonians, to get money for the fleet, he sent word on the first day that he wished to meet with Cyrus. But on hearing that Cyrus was drinking, he said, "I will wait until he has finished drinking," and left for that day, since he judged it too discourteous to press the matter when he learned it was not possible to meet him. The next day, hearing again that Cyrus was drinking and would not come forward, he said, "One must not be so eager to get money as to do anything unworthy of Sparta," and departed for Ephesus, calling down many curses on those who had first been corrupted by the barbarians and had taught them insolence through wealth. And he swore before those present that as soon as he reached Sparta, he would do everything in his power to reconcile the Greeks with one another, so that they might be more formidable to the barbarians and no longer need the barbarians' strength against each other. Asked what sort of men the Ionians are, he said, "As free men, bad, as slaves, good." When Cyrus sent ahead pay for the soldiers and gifts for Callicratidas himself, he took only the pay and sent back the gifts, saying that there was no need for a private friendship between himself and Cyrus, since the friendship already existing in common between Cyrus and all the Lacedaemonians was enough for him as well. When he was about to fight a sea battle off Arginusae, and Hermon the helmsman said it would be well to sail away, since the Athenian triremes were far more numerous, he said, "And what of that? To flee is shameful and harmful to Sparta, but to stand fast and either die or conquer is best." Having offered sacrifice beforehand, when he heard from the seer that the burnt offerings signified victory for the army but death for the general, he was not at all dismayed, but said, "Sparta does not depend on one man, for if I die, my country will be no worse off, but if I yield to the enemy, it will be worse off." So, appointing Cleander commander in his place, he set out for the battle and died fighting. Cleombrotus, son of Pausanias, when a certain stranger was disputing with his father about virtue, said, "Up to this point my father is better than you, until you too have begotten a son." Cleomenes, son of Anaxandrides, said that Homer was the poet of the Lacedaemonians, and Hesiod that of the Helots, the one having taught how one must make war, the other how one must farm. Having made a 7-day truce with the Argives, he watched for the third night, when they were sleeping because they trusted the truce and fell upon them, killing some and taking others captive. When reproached for breaking his oaths, he said he had not sworn to include the nights along with the days. And besides, whatever harm one does to one's enemies is held, by gods and men alike, to lie beyond the reach of justice. As it happened, he was repulsed from Argos, the city he had betrayed the truce to attack, because the women took up the arms hanging in the temples and defended it against him with them. And later, having gone out of his mind, he seized a small knife and cut himself open from the ankles up to the vital parts, and so ended his life, laughing and grinning. When the seer tried to dissuade him from leading the army against the city of the Argives, saying the retreat from it would prove shameful, he approached the city all the same, and when he saw the gates shut and the women upon the walls, he said, "Does this retreat seem shameful to you, when, with their men dead, the women have shut the gates?" To the Argives, who reviled him as a perjurer and an impious man, he said, "To speak ill of me lies in your power. To do ill to you lies in mine." To the envoys from Samos, who urged him to make war on Polycrates the tyrant, and made a long speech of it, he said, "Of what you have said, I no longer remember the beginning, and because of that I do not understand the middle, and the end I do not approve." When a pirate who had overrun the countryside, upon being captured, said, "I had no food for my soldiers, so I came to take by force from those who had it but would not give it willingly," he said, "Concise wickedness." When some worthless fellow spoke ill of him, he said, "Is it for this reason that you speak ill of everyone, so that in defending themselves people will have no time to speak of your own vice?" When one of the citizens said that a good king ought to be gentle in every respect, he said, "Yes, up to the point of not thereby inviting contempt." Struck down by a long illness, he began attending to purifiers and seers, though he had paid them no heed before, and when someone expressed surprise, he said, "Why are you surprised? I am not the same man now that I was then, and not being the same, I do not approve the same things." When a certain sophist was discoursing on courage, he laughed a great deal. And when the man said, "Why do you laugh, Cleomenes, when you hear someone discoursing on courage, and that too though you are a king?" He said, because stranger, if the swallow too were speaking of it, I would do the same, but if it were an eagle, I would keep quite still. When the Argives claimed to have made up for their earlier defeat, he said, I am amazed if, by the addition of two syllables, you have now become better men than you were before. When someone reviled him and said, You are soft, Cleomenes, he said, better that than unjust, but you love money, though you have enough of it. A certain lyre player, wishing to commend himself to him, praised the man in various respects and said he was the best lyre player among the Greeks. But Cleomenes, pointing to one of those standing by, said, By the gods, this man here is my soup cook. When Meandrius, tyrant of Samos, fled to Sparta because of the Persian invasion, and displayed all the gold and silver cups he had brought, offering to give as much as he wished, Cleomenes took nothing. And being wary lest Meandrius give them to some of the other citizens instead, he went to the ephors and said it would be better for Sparta if his guest friend the Samian left the Peloponnese, so that he not persuade any of the Spartiates to become corrupt. And they, heeding him, banished Meandrius that very day. When someone said, Why, though you have often defeated the Argives who make war on you, have you not destroyed them? He said, We would not destroy them, so that we might have training partners for our young men. When someone asked him why the Spartiates do not dedicate to the gods the spoils taken from their enemies, he said, Because they come from cowards. Cleomenes, son of Cleombrotus, when someone gave him fighting cocks and said that they die fighting for victory, said, Give me instead some of those that kill them, those are better than these. Labodas, when someone was making a long speech, said, Why such a great preamble to me about small matters? However great the matter, so great should be the speech one uses for it. Leodichidas the first, when someone said that he was inconstant, said, It is because of circumstances, he said, not, as with you, because of my own bad character. To one who asked how a man might best preserve the good things he already has, he said, By not entrusting everything to fortune. Asked what free-born children ought above all to learn, he said, Those things that will benefit them once they have become men. When someone asked why the Spartiates drink little, he said, So that others may not deliberate on our behalf, but we on behalf of others. Leodichidas, son of Ariston, to the man who told him that Demaritus's people spoke ill of him, said, By the gods, I am not surprised, none of them could speak well of anything. When a snake coiled itself around the bolt of the nearer gate, and the seers declared it a portent, he said, It does not seem so to me, but if the bolt had coiled itself around the snake, that would have been a portent. To Philip, the initiator into the Orphic rites, who was utterly destitute but claimed that those he initiated are happy after the end of life, he said, Why then, you fool, do you not die as quickly as possible, so as at once to be rid of your misery and your poverty and stop lamenting them? When someone asked him why they do not dedicate to the gods the arms taken from their enemies, he said that whatever is captured, because of the cowardice of its owners, is not fit either for the young to look upon or to be dedicated to the gods. Leon, son of Eurycratidas, asked what kind of city a man should live in to live safely, said, One where the inhabitants own neither too much nor too little, and where justice is strong and injustice weak. Seeing the runners at Olympia straining at the start to gain an unfair advantage, he said, How much more eagerly do runners strive for speed than for justice? When someone spoke at the wrong moment about matters that were not without use, he said, Stranger, you use the right thing at the wrong time. Leonidas, son of Anaxandridas, brother of Cleomenes, to one who said, Except for being king, you are no different from us, said, But I would not be king at all, were I not better than you. When his wife Gorgo asked him, as he was setting out for Thermopylae to fight the Persian, whether he had any instructions for her, he said, Marry good men and bear good children. When the ephors said he was taking too few men to Thermopylae, he said, Too few for the task we are going to, but not too few for any other. And when they said again, Have you resolved to do anything other than block the passes against the barbarians? He said, In word, yes, but indeed to die for the sake of the Greeks. Once at Thermopylae, he said to his fellow soldiers, They say the barbarian is drawing near and we are wasting time, but we must already either kill these barbarians or ourselves be ready to die. When someone said, Because of the barbarians' arrows, one cannot even see the sun, he said, Then it will be pleasant if we are to fight them in the shade. When another said, They are close upon us, he said, Then we too are close upon them. When someone said, Leonidas, do you really come to risk so much against so many with so few? he said. If you think I rely on numbers, not even all of Greece together is enough, for it is a small fraction of their multitude. But if I rely on courage, this number is sufficient. When another man said the same thing, he replied, Indeed, I am bringing many men who are going to die. And when Xerxes wrote to him, It is possible for you, without warring against the gods, to be arrayed at my side and to rule Greece as sole monarch. He wrote back, If you knew the good things of life, you would refrain from coveting what belongs to others. But as for me, but death on behalf of Greece is better than ruling as sole monarch over my own kinsmen. Again, when Xerxes wrote, Send me your weapons, he wrote back, Come and take them. When he wished to attack the enemy at once, the polemarchs told him that he ought to wait for the rest of the allies. Why, he said, are not those present who intend to fight? Or do you not know that it is only those who respect and fear their kings who fight against the enemy? He ordered his soldiers to take their breakfast as men who would dine in Hades. When asked why the best men prefer a glorious death to an inglorious life, he said, Because they consider the one to belong to nature, the other to themselves. Wishing to save the young unmarried men, but knowing that they would not openly consent to it, he gave each of them a dispatch staff and sent them off to the ephors. He also wished to save three of the full-grown men, but they, realizing his intent, refused to take the staffs. Of these, one said, I came here as a fighter, not a herald. The second said, By staying here I shall prove myself the better man. The third said, I will not be last of these, but first to fight. Lachegus, the father of Polyaenides and Seron, when someone reported to him that one of his sons had died, said, I knew long ago that he had to die. Lycurgus, the lawgiver, wishing to transform the citizens from their former way of life into a more disciplined mode of living, and to make them men of true worth, for they had grown soft in their habits, raised two puppies born of the same father and mother. One he left at home and accustomed to gluttony, the other he took out and trained in hunting. Then, bringing them into the assembly, he set out scraps of food together with a hare, and released the hare as well. When each dog rushed to what it was used to, and the one caught the hare, he said, You see, citizens, that though of the same stock, through their manner of upbringing they have turned out very different from one another, and that training proves more effective than nature in producing excellence. But some say that the puppies he brought forward were not in fact of the same parentage, but that one was from house dogs and the other from hunting dogs, and that he then trained the one of inferior stock for hunting and accustomed the one of better stock only to gluttony. And that when each rushed to what it was used to, he made it clear how much training contributes to making creatures better or worse, and said, So too, citizens, the noble birth so admired by the many, and our descent from Heracles, does us no good at all unless we do the things by which he appeared the most famous and noble of all men, by training and by learning what is good throughout the whole of life. Having carried out a redistribution of the land and allotted an equal share to every citizen, he is said, some time later, on returning from abroad and passing through the countryside just after it had been harvested, to have seen the heaps of grain lying side by side and level, and to have been delighted and, smiling, to have said to those present that the whole of Laconia looked like the estate of many brothers newly divided among them. And after introducing the cancellation of debts, he also attempted to divide equally all the property held within households, so as entirely to remove inequality and unevenness. But since he saw that people would not readily accept an outright confiscation, he abolished gold and silver coinage and ordered that only iron money be used, and set a limit on how much of one's whole property could be held in exchange for it.